I'm going to move the amendment and then carry it over.
Okay, then I don't think I have any no votes.
We're at call.
Call the House Committee on Healthcare to order for April 8th, this beautiful sunny day when everybody should be outside getting a raise rather than here working, but instead we'll work. We don't have a full committee yet, but I would like to open work sessions on the next, on the two, open work sessions on the two bills if nobody has a problem. For the purpose of adopting an amendment in each bill and then carrying it over till next time, it'll give people a chance to see the form it's in before we have to act on Friday. So I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2551 for the purpose of adopting the -6 amendments. Do I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I would like to move that the committee adopt the -6 amendments dated April 8th, 2015 for House Bill 2551.
Representative Nose moves that we adopt the -6 amendments dated 4-8-15 to House Bill 2551. Is there any discussion about that? I think those amendments move this from an opt-out process to an... are we talking about the right one?
Yeah.
That's my bill. I think 6 gets everybody here. But we'll find out. We've been working for it. And as of today, things have changed. But as of today, I think everybody's supporting the bill. So if there's no objection, we'll adopt the -6 and close the work session on 2551. Open a work session on 2758. This is the -4s that we thought had everybody on the EOB bill, and this amendment turns it to adopt to an opt-in amendment, opt-in at the point of contact with the physicians. We think we have it, everything, everybody agreeing to it, but we'll know better between now and Friday. So
can
I have a
question?
Motion? Yes, sir.
What's the age that this would cover?
I think it's the age of medical consent is probably what it would be. So it'd probably be 15. And even when people are older, they won't be discriminated against.
Got it.
Do I have a motion on the -6?
Mr. Chair, I would like to move to adopt the -4 amendments dated April 6, 2015 for House Bill 2758.
Representative Nose moves that we add the -4 amendments dated, I'm sorry, I missed the date.
April 6, 2015
to House Bill 2758. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? So moved. Close the work session. Yes.
If I could, I'd just like to thank you for this process. I think it's helpful to have a chance to take a deep breath before you have to make the final vote. It's much appreciated.
Thank you.
I think
much.
We get better legislation that way.
I agree with that. I mean, especially with these complex amendments and complex issues, it's helpful.
Listen, in the next few days, we're going to have a ton of bills. So at any point, if you want that to happen, I mean, I'll try and make it happen routinely, but if there's a bill that you say, we're not ready to think about today, let's carry on. We're leaving the last day, April 20th, wide open.
Okay.
So that we can keep moving things forward and can have room for them. But we're going to have a ton of bills in front of us.
Thank you.
Close the work session on House Bill 2758 and open up a public hearing on House Bill 3451. What do we have, Madam Administrator?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3451 comes to you from Representative Widener and Representative Kenny Geyer, which requires the Oregon Health Authority to reimburse freestanding birthing centers that are based on the median cost to the birthing centers in Oregon that provide similar services. Applies to claims for services provided on or after January 1, 2016. Declares an emergency effective on passage.
How does this relate to 3456, Madam Administrator?
I think Representative Widener would really like to explain that relationship.
Do we open both them at the same time is the question.
Nicely done.
I think you probably could open them. What do you think?
Let's open a public hearing on House Bill.
Mr. Chair, we could do both at one time. We just need to be specific because one's dealing with CCO, but they're both reimbursement. So,
all right. I'll open the public hearing on 3456, and we can deal. That'll allow any witness to talk about both of them if they want to save some time. But we'll call witnesses. I think Representative Kenny Geyer, Representative Widener would like you to join him.
It doesn't matter.
I'm going to cheer you from
I thought
here.
He was.
You
can cheer from there.
I'm cheering you from here.
I thought it would be fun to see you at the same table.
He's in the
wearing
pod.
My favorite color.
He's in the pod.
Widener, go for it.
That was my opening pledge.
And it lasted for a day.
I was going to take a picture.
That's what I'm worried about.
Chair Greenlick and distinguished colleagues on the House Committee of Health Care, thank you for hearing House Bill 3451 today. My name is State Representative Jim Widener, and my district covers most of Yamhill County and Southwest Washington County. House Bill 3451 seeks to address some of the payment discrepancies and reimbursement rates that adversely affect our midwife and our midwife industry and the access to health care that many women need. This bill will direct the Oregon Health Authority to reimburse freestanding birthing centers based on the current median cost statewide. The issue is that reimbursement rates are based on what they were back in 1999, with Medicaid recipients seeking access to women's health care in the form of licensed midwifery. Birthing centers are taking them at a significant financial loss. Essentially, these passionate practitioners of midwifery and their birthing centers are paying people to have babies. You may ask why this is. This is because they are being reimbursed for the cost of the birthing experience, which includes medical supplies and a room, but it does not include professional fees. This would be in kin to a dentist being reimbursed for the filling, but none of the service or labor work that he had done during the time, or a hygienist for the tools that she used, but not for the time that she had done while cleaning the teeth. And if our dentist would not have left, he would understand this.
He left intentionally, I think.
I've had the experience of visiting a birthing center and think they are providing Oregonians with a valuable and much desired medical service. I would like to see them reimbursed for their professional fees like any other medical provider. Please support this bill to keep the industry of midwifery available to Oregon's women and listen closely to their testimony, because we do have some midwives here with us today.
Representative Widener, this is for direct entry midwives, and these patients we're talking about here are open card Medicaid patients, is that right?
That would be correct.
Thank you.
And we will have some midwives that are here that can speak very technical to it that would like to be more midwives than having to be basically financial advisors and deal with insurance and billing and everything else. So they've ran into some of the pitfalls of the healthcare system.
You want to comment on 3456, or would you rather wait?
I can do 3456 while I'm here as well. So, and I've already said who I am and where I'm from, but I will briefly describe the broad aspects of this bill and allow the professionals testifying today to cover any details that I may miss when I'm doing this bill. The Affordable Care Act mandated that Medicaid in all states provide reimbursement and access to licensed midwives, providing care in birthing centers. Unfortunately, many CCOs in Oregon have been uncooperative in the reimbursements, often saying that they cannot pay this provider type until the CMS established guidelines. I have been informed that CMS has provided clarification in 2011 that the Affordable Care Act should be allowed and CCOs should be issuing reimbursement to licensed midwife services for Medicaid recipients using birthing centers. To clearly establish this in statute will help both parties understand the requirement for licensed midwives reimbursement within the state Medicaid system. I have been to the facility here just in Hopewell, seen the struggles that they have in collecting money from CCOs. This bill is about creating greater access to health care providers and helping these small businesses. This bill seeks to clarify for Oregon, the implementation of the Affordable Care Act and establish it clear in terms the requirements to reimburse licensed midwives for their Medicaid patients under Section 2301 of the ACA. Thank you for your time and attention to House Bill 3456.
And this says, as I read the summary, and let's make sure the summary is right, that it would require payments of a direct entry midwife if under those same conditions the CCO would have paid a licensed physician or a certified nurse midwife.
That would appear to be correct in what it, so says, it says in the bottom.
The summary.
And it's part of the bill. It's a nice any little one paragraph.
Any other questions? Well, now that he slandered dentistry, you've come back.
Thank you.
Is there any questions, Representative Widener? Thank you, Jim. Did you call the first panel on 3451? Is there a lot of overlap in the witness list?
Yes. It appears to be.
All right. Well, why don't you call a panel? The witnesses, you can address either of the two bills.
Just be clear on which one you're talking
about.
Yes.
Just
Silke Akerson. Bella Bee, and Sherry Clark are on both of them. Okay, so she's...
Please identify yourself when you start your testimony. Don't use any more time than you need to.
Chair Greenlick and members of the committee, it's a pleasure to see you all. I was surprised that we have midwifery bills this session. We were thinking maybe we'd get a break. But I'm very happy to see these bills here. I think they do a lot to put Oregon in the forefront of the movement to integrate.
Didn't introduce yourself.
Oh, sorry. Excuse me. I'm Silke Akerson from the Oregon Midwifery Council, and I'm a midwife in Portland, Oregon, a licensed direct entry midwife. I'm happy about both of these bills. And Chair Greenlick, would you like me to address both of the bills at this? Just alternate.
Why don't you?
Okay. We're very happy to see these bills. House Bill 3451 would hopefully remedy a problem that is really significant right now. There are many licensed direct entry midwives in birth centers who would like to serve low-income women, women who are covered by the Oregon Health Plan, but are doing so basically at a loss currently. Midwifery care is very comprehensive, and it follows a pregnant woman and family from early in the pregnancy all the way to 6 to 8 weeks postpartum. And midwives are being paid in total just $2,328.68 for an entire course of care, which includes 10 to 12 approximately prenatal visits, 24-hour on-call availability for the entire duration of care, complete labor and delivery care, immediate postpartum care both for the mother and the baby, and 6 weeks of postpartum care for the mother and the baby, which is usually 4 to 6 visits. So I don't know if you can quickly go through the math of that, but it's a phenomenally low reimbursement for a comprehensive amount of care that has some really fantastic outcomes that are big, both cost and health benefits, short-term and long-term, for the health benefit payer. We have very low rates of preterm birth, very low cesarean section rate, incredibly high breastfeeding success rates. I think our breastfeeding success rate is like 98% at 6 weeks postpartum, which is unparalleled in other delivery care systems.
But can we go through the math a different way? You say it'll be 2,300 roughly now. What would it be under this plan?
This doesn't define the amount that it would be. It sets up a rubric for figuring out what it should be, that is, so that it would be based a little bit more on the cost that goes into that care, and it doesn't set a dollar amount.
But have you estimated how it would change the reimbursement rate?
I I have not. So what my understanding of it is that it would, that the reimbursement would be based on the median cost to the birth center of providing that care. And I don't, that's not something that I fully understand how that would work. Yeah.
We have a question.
Question directly related to that. So I'm a little uncertain. Is there any other example where we reimburse based on median cost, or is that a new way?
I don't know what median cost means in this case.
I don't either.
Yeah. I don't have the answer to that question, and perhaps some of the other people testifying will. We weren't involved in the drafting of this bill. We're just happy that it's here. And whether this is the way that it's, the Oregon Midwifery Council is not actually attached to whether this is the way that it's figured or if there's another way that it's figured. It just, ultimately what needs to happen is that midwives and birth centers need to be reimbursed in a way where they can actually afford to continue providing this care. That's all.
Why didn't you have an answer to that question? And then we'll let her finish.
We do.
Testimony.
We have testimony coming up that will address that and everything. But yes.
Great. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Midwives are also being reimbursed a supply fee, which is $229.27, which is, the only other fee that they're being reimbursed for, and that is supposed to cover the full cost of all medications and supplies that need to be had on hand for every birth, the newborn screening test kit, and I mean the amount of things that a midwife has in a birth center or carries to a home birth is kind of phenomenal. So I just wanted to give you a sense of what the current situation is about that. And again, our position is we're not attached to this particular way of figuring out a solution, but some sort of solution would be really, really useful. And then about the other bill, House Bill 3456, we're just very, very strongly in support of this bill that would bring Oregon into better alignment with the requirements of the Affordable Care Act. We're not the only state who's dealing with this issue where payers in a state are trying to understand what they do and don't have to do in relation to the federal requirements to pay midwives in birth centers. And I think some state-by-state clarification is going to be needed to bring payers into alignment with that requirement. The only thing that I would add is that I would urge the committee to amend the bill to include licensed direct entry midwives both in birth centers and who are providing home births, because it's the same provider type, same outcomes, same scope of practice, and it would address the whole issue instead of just addressing one segment of the issue. Again, midwives are providing a great health benefit to the state, where we have very clear evidence that for healthy women experiencing low-risk pregnancies, that home birth and birth center birth with a trained midwife is a safe and cost-effective option that has these pretty profound short-term and long-term cost and health benefits to the health system in terms of reduced costs around cesarean section, reduced costs with lower rates of preterm birth, and the benefits of breastfeeding that we're just starting to understand all of the downstream benefits that come from those high rates of breastfeeding.
Thank you.
I won't take any more of your time, and thank you so much for considering these bills.
Thank you. Yes, please.
I'm Sherry Clark. I am the office manager for Bella Vie Gentle Birth Center, and I just have a few short things that I want to say about each individual bill, and thank you so much for scheduling a public hearing on this. House Bill HB 3451 is important for midwives and birth centers in Oregon because it reimburses birth centers for their facility costs for women on the Oregon Health Plan. Currently, birth centers are not being reimbursed for their facility costs at a fair rate. The rate they are being reimbursed does not even cover their costs. Birth centers are not wanting to make a profit on the state, but they are wanting to get paid for the cost of mothers giving birth at their facility. The first 24 to 48 hours after birth are crucial for mothers and their babies to get a healthy start. Please consider supporting House Bill 3451 so that women on OHP can have access to birth centers and birth centers can be reimbursed for their facility fees. As it stands, birth centers cannot continue to operate with the current facility payments they are receiving. birth centers should not have to limit how many clients they take in who have OHP coverage because of a poor facility payment. This limits women's choices and birth centers' ability to survive financially. House Bill 3456 is important for midwives and birth centers in Oregon because it recognizes licensed direct entry midwives as reimbursable care providers for women on the Oregon Health Plan. Currently, some CCOs require a certified nurse midwife. Certified nurse midwives and licensed direct entry midwives provide the same care in birthing centers. Licensed direct entry midwives should be recognized by CCOs as reimbursable providers in a birthing center to low-risk women. CCOs need to be required by law to uphold the Affordable Care Act and CMS guidance from September 2011, which states that licensed direct entry midwives are recognized providers and should be reimbursed for the care of women on OHP. Please support HB 3456 so that low-risk women on OHP can have access to licensed directory and licensed direct entry midwives in birth centers.
Thank you very much. Any questions?
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Chair, I just wondered if you could answer the questions about the determining the cost.
There are two other midwives here who are owners of two birthing centers in Oregon who are going to expand on that for
you. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. Would you call the next panel, please?
Lee Carlson. Carol Gilbert. And Desiree.
Desiree something.
Yeah.
Oh, cute.
LaFog.
Go ahead. I guess I was involved. This is Laura Erickson. Would you like me to speak first, though?
Come on, guys. Let's go. Just organize.
Okay, go ahead. Maybe just pull up a chair.
How did I get four people and I had one call three names?
Well, maybe you got the last one left over from the last panel.
Might be. You want to start?
Yeah. Hi, my name is Carol Gilbert. This is my son, Uriah. I am here to show my support for House Bill 3451. A little more than a year ago, I found out I was pregnant with my first child. I was ecstatic. We had gotten pregnant right before my husband was laid off from his job of 5 years, but I was so grateful to know that the state of Oregon would take care of me while my husband found another job and provided another source of insurance for our growing family. With my child growing in my womb, I set out to find a place that I would bring him into the world. I had done my research. I knew that cesarean births were risky. I knew that for my normal pregnancy, the best option for me would be a vaginal birth. That being said, in a hospital setting, I still had a 33% chance of having a cesarean delivery, and I was not comfortable with those stats. I had another problem as well. I have always been nervous in hospitals, and I am not comfortable with men I do not know in my personal space. I knew a hospital would not be a good choice for me for those reasons. I wanted to bring my baby into the world somewhere where I felt safe, with professionals who could monitor my labor and delivery to make sure my baby and I were safe. My search led me to Bella Vie Gentle Birth Center. You wouldn't believe how happy I was when I found out they could take OHP. I learned they could only accept 3 births per month covered by OHP because they lost money by accepting this form of insurance. The Oregon Health Authority only reimburses Bella Vie for a small fraction of their facility costs. I was the third to call, and I was in, but I couldn't stop myself from considering the other women, like me, who were not okay with the risk of hospital birth, but they couldn't deliver at Bella Vie because they called after I did. Bella Vie couldn't afford to lose any more money than 3 OHP births per month. Throughout my prenatal care, I saw 2 midwives, whom I grew to love, at hour-long appointments. Not only did I feel safe and comfortable with them, I also learned so much from them about how to take care of myself during pregnancy. We talked about every test and standard procedure, the same ones they do in the hospital at OB appointments, and whether or not I wanted them. I found myself growing empowered. My healthcare was in my hands. I was an active role in making medical decisions for myself and my child. I was healthy and I was strong. I was so thankful that OHP was helping me have a safe birth, but I was irritated that OHP wasn't paying for the bills paying the birth center for what it cost them to facilitate births. I couldn't understand why the Oregon Health Authority was willing to fully reimburse care for women in a hospital setting, but only partially for my birth at Bella Vie, despite the phenomenal care and their incredible statistics for vaginal births. Shouldn't they be fully reimbursing and encouraging women to seek out midwifery care, considering vaginal births are far less expensive than cesarean births? Bella Vie Birth Center and other freestanding birth centers are sending out healthy, empowered moms into our communities with healthy, happy babies on our hips. What a blessing it is to have Bella Vie and the other birth centers in our state for women like me who want a safe place to birth our babies outside of a hospital. Please give your support to this bill so Bella Vie and other birth centers will be fully reimbursed for their services so they can continue to provide this great service to more women. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you.
And I also have another little letter considering the House Bill 3456. I want to tell you about the care I received from my two different midwives during my prenatal and postpartum care at Bella Vie. My midwives were Lenore Charles and Meredith Klein. I took turns seeing each of them at every other appointment. Both Lenore and Meredith were professional, both had years of experience, and both of these fine women knew how to catch a baby. Additionally, both of my midwives were my counselors, my teachers, and my encouragers. You see, when the time had come for me to go into labor, I was educated, I was empowered, and I felt safe, secure, and comfortable because of the care I received from both of my midwives. I trusted these women to take care of me in the delicate state of labor. It is obvious to me that both of these women were capable of delivering my baby, despite the fact that one of these women's licenses isn't recognized as a care provider by some health benefit plans. Whether seeing an OB, a certified nurse practitioner, or a licensed direct entry midwife, it is important for women to have a choice in who guides them through pregnancy and birth. It is important that they are not limited by what their insurance covers. You see, this isn't just a trip to the doctor for a checkup. It isn't just another standard procedure to bring a baby into the world. It is birth. Birth is a sacred event in a woman's life. It is an event that has a lasting impact not only on the woman's life, but also the child. Birth is not to be taken lightly, and that is why it is so important that we have options. By supporting this bill, you are giving women more options on how to make this extraordinary event exactly how they want it to be. Please realize the weight of the situation. I've seen too many people turned away from giving birth the way they feel comfortable and safe because their insurance wouldn't cover an LDM. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, next, please.
My name is Lee Carlson, and I am for House Bill 3451. The reasons why are the care that I've received from Bella Vie have been exceptional, and the costs for the postpartum stay are detrimental for keeping the center up and running in the professional manner that is needed. I was able to experience care at the hospital and at this amazing birthing center. I attest that the birthing center was a much calmer and better place for laboring, prenatal care, and postnatal care. I felt more supported and cared for every second at Bella Vie, and it was not the case for me at the hospital. The food that Bella Vie prepares and the testing they offer to the mamas and the babies are beautiful, and their beautiful surroundings that they offer should be financially compensated. I was going to have a vaginal birth and chose to go to the hospital partway through my birth and had end up having to do emergency cesarean section. And if I have another birth, I plan on going to Bella Vie and having a vaginal birth after cesarean and hopefully have a smaller baby the second round so I can actually have it there. I owe so much of my support through this life-changing event into motherhood to Bella Vie, and the women there are a godsend, and I wouldn't be who I am today without having that. I'm also M4 House Bill 3456. During my care at Bella Vie, I was on OHP, and I received care from both the midwives, and their care was exceptional. One was a certified nurse midwife, and the other is a licensed direct entry midwife. Both of these women and their care was more than I expected. They followed my health, and the certified nurse midwife caught that I had an overabundance of amniotic fluid and sent me in for more testing. Each of these women should be compensated for their work. Both are assets to a team and worthy of pay. Thank you.
Sure. Did you say your name when you started?
Lee Carlson.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
I'm Desiree Lefebvre, and I am co-owner of Bellevue Dental Birth Center. I actually manage the practice, and my business partner, Petra Prostrednik, manages the business. She planned to be here today, but had one of her children on a school outing recently severely injured, and so she has been home and not able to do that. She has a broken back, unfortunately. I'm going to do my very best to answer your questions, and I'm telling you that just because I want you to know that she doesn't take this lightly.
Can I interrupt this, please? We need to get a witness in on another bill. Mm-hmm. Can we pause this thing and then you come back on and we'll have plenty of time for you?
Should I stay here?
No, why don't you
okay.
Mm-hmm. Come back? I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3145 and House Bill 3149. That's Representative McClain and one other person to talk on the first bill. And just Representative McClain on the second bill. We've got a long list of witnesses on that bill. But we'll be back when we
great
finish.
Tie.
All four bills open, though. Representative McClain.
Thank you.
You're on.
Chair Greenlick and members of the committee. My name is Mike McClain. I represent House District 55. I'm here with my constituent, Jody Kerr, who has pointed out a consequence to Oregon law that has led to what is a very unjust result on with her child and activities in school, and I think it's a quick fix. I'll let her tell her story and why I think this fix is a good one.
Thank you, Chairman Greenlick and members of the committee. Thank you for hearing us today. I'm the mother of three children, two who deal with type 1 diabetes.
Excuse me, would you say what your name, please?
Oh, Jody Kerr, sorry.
And you're testifying on House Bill?
3149.
3149. Okay, thank you.
So Chairman Greenlick and members of the committee, I'm Jody Kerr, and I am a mother of three children, two deal with type 1 diabetes and celiac disease on a daily basis. These two children with special needs are students at Gilchrist School in Gilchrist, Oregon. Our family recently moved from Oregon, from Maryland, because of a tremendous job opportunity, and took our family out of state to Maryland. My husband is an Oregon State graduate and professional chemical engineer, and we decided to move back to Oregon after the job when we realized that we had school orders from Johns Hopkins University in Maryland. We were surprised that the orders from the children's physicians were not acceptable because they were out of state. Since the move, we no longer had established care in Oregon, and it would take 90 days to establish care with the specialist. Current law puts the school and school nurses in quite a bind. Sports, field trips, and day-to-day activities are all required school orders for kids' special medical needs. Transitioning to a new school is tough enough. Then to add the left out because of paperwork detail and all it all adds stress to families. We were able to get reestablished inpatient with our former clinic, but the process took 90 days. In the meantime, we had to ask general physicians to sign orders. She was not a specialist and was not comfortable with doing so, but understood the dilemma. It did not seem like the safe choice. Giving a longer grace period for in-state orders with will benefit children, schools, and put unnecessary pressure on doctors to make decisions for patients who may not be familiar. Thank you for considering lengthening the number of days families have to establish care with in-state doctors. Children with special health issues battle enough day-to-day issues. Paperwork doesn't need to be one of them.
And I'd add, members of the committee, what we're asking is that if you have a licensed physician who has said, you know, this girl who has a disease can play sports and these are the sports she can do, we're just asking that order would be good for 90 days so that as they move to a new state and transition to a new school. Tough situation in Gilchrist is that there's, of course, the nearest medical care is Bend. For specialists, and then you have to get in. And when you have even more rural areas, like in my district, you have to go to Portland to get a specialist. Was your specialist in Portland? Okay, so it's quite a trip. So the combination of which it meant, you know, she couldn't, the valid order from the doctor in Maryland couldn't let the RN who was signing off on kids playing sports, couldn't be recognized. So we're asking for a 90-day window. It's as simple as that. We'll ask, answer any questions you have.
Are there any questions? Did you? No?
No, it's just interesting.
Okay.
Very reasonable.
It's not even easy. It's the openings and appointments.
Oh, as Jody just said, you're right. It's opening and appointment. I think the drives has effect, but clearly just getting into specialists is stuff. Well, thank you, and I'll just switch gears quickly to House Bill 3145. And I brought this bill. I have some testimony here that was sent to me. I don't know if it's been admitted here, but I'll hand it over to the administrator. But home care folks in Central Oregon talked to Dr. Bueller and I, Representative Bueller from District 54 in Bend. And again, I'm Mike McLean from District 55. But they asked us to bring this bill, and they just pointed out, I think, a good thing. And here it is that House Bill 3145 just asks that the same rules and regulations that license in home care agencies are required to follow would apply to those who are on the new state registry that we pass in Senate Bill 1542. So it's designed to make sure the same level of care is being given those who are getting care in the assisted situation. So I've got these letters here. I'll hand them over so they're a part of the record. That's what the bill does. It's as simple as that. And appreciate your concern and review of this. And the only thing I'd say is obviously a lot of these bills, like Senate or House Bill 3145, I think point out areas where we need to have a conversation on are we making sure our constituents have that same level of care. I'd love to see it pass. If you, Mr. Chair, I think it's not ready, at least I'd like perhaps some discussion with maybe members of your healthcare committee and some of my constituents about how this issue gets resolved later. My only plug is I think 3149 is something pretty simple, and if you could, let's move that now. And I'm asking for a work session, and we move that to the floor. Anyway,
we'll close the public hearing on 3149, and we'll schedule a work session on it.
All right. Thank you, sir.
It's not, and we'll hear the hearing on 3145 and see where we go from there.
Thank you. Any questions you have for me? All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative McLean. Okay, we have three public hearings going now. Let's go back to where we were just a minute ago.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
If it's that easy, could I just have a work session on my two bills?
Maybe. You need to make sure you have simple bills.
Aren't you going
to
make him be good?
They're one-pagers. It's only a paragraph.
We'll see.
This is easy.
Work sessions.
Okay, just started. Please introduce yourself again.
Again, I'm Desiree LaFave. I'm co-owner of Bella V Gentle Birth Center. I manage the practice there. My business partner, Petra Prestrednik, manages the business, and I'm giving testimony on both of our behalf. And I will do my best
bills?
To answer. And on both bills, yes.
Okay.
Do my best to answer any questions without her here. There are some other birth center owners here that are more able maybe to answer some of those financial questions. So on House Bill 3451, which, as you know, would require the Oregon Health Authority to reimburse birth center facility charges at a rate that would cover our expenses, we're, of course, very in support of that House bill. And I can tell you that the Affordable Care Act has not been simple for our small businesses to absorb the changes in. One of the things that we've had to do is get very purposeful in being able to determine what certain things are costing us and what we, of course, glean from those services. And I can tell you with certainty that we, when calculating a year recently, we were able to determine that Bellevue had spent an additional $64,000 on taking Medicaid patients over what we actually gleaned for the care of those people. So we, of course, provide the same care that we would to any other woman, and but at a loss. And so that is something that it's too difficult for us to afford. We had to scale down. Originally, we were able to take the Oregon Health Plan for any woman that called. This was 7 or more years ago, and that's how old Bellevue is, by the way. This has been an issue, and I've been working in birth centers and very closely working in sort of understanding facility fees and making the system work for about 15 years, and well, actually since 1999, and I remember when they actually determined the facility fee for birth centers, and it was done simply that they called the birth center that had recently opened and a birth center that was in existence for longer and asked them a few questions, and then they told them that the fee would be $600 for the facility, and so that was many years ago, and at the time, we could bill for the number of calendar dates a woman was admitted, which is a typical way that birth was billed at that time. So if somebody was there in labor for a calendar day, and as you probably know, that it's allowed that women stay up to 48 hours after they give birth for all sorts of reasons, but to watch babies for signs of infection and for women after blood loss and different things like that for their safety. And so if a woman was admitted for 3 days, the birth center at that time would get $1,800. And what is happening is 7 years ago, then they decided that a birth center could only actually charge one facility date. So it changed from facility dates to a case agreement. And so it made what we got paid for the facility go from $1,800 down to $600. And I could tell you about some of our expenses right now, but I don't want to bore you with the details.
I'm going to have to ask everybody to hold down the testimony.
Okay.
So if you please finish, I'll ask people to hold their testimony to 2 minutes. We have a room full of people, and we have an hour.
Okay. So we have paid out a tremendous amount of money. We cannot continue to take this number of women on the Oregon Health Plan. We get calls every day of disappointed people that we just simply cannot take care of because of the cost to us. You were asking about the median amount, and if somebody asked if there were other, you know, if there was a precedent set for using a median amount, I actually don't know the answer to that question, but I do know that it felt unusual to choose a dollar amount for each birth center, and the way that it was put originally was so that all the birth centers could submit their median amount, and that then the state would be protected from the possibility of somebody running a really expensive business, and so all birth centers coming together, giving that median amount would then make all sorts of business models, like somebody buying property for their business to be maintained in comparison to somebody renting, those sorts of things. So we felt like it would actually make a concession for that. Also, House Bill 3456,
Please finish up.
Finish up this one? Okay.
Finish up anyone.
Okay. I've been working on this one for several years, since 2010, and we've been continually turned down by some of the insurance companies, the CCOs. Some of them have followed the Affordable Care Act. Some of them have not. It's the most expensive birth in my clinic is one that can only use nurse midwives, and it is the one that we're getting the least amount of money for.
Thank you very much. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, hello. My name is Laura Erickson. Thank you for listening to us today. Well, I'll cut it short. I'm from Clackamas County, and I have a birth center in Portland, Oregon. I've been a midwife for 30 years. I've owned a birth center for 13 years. I'm going to talk just a little bit about House Bill 3451 and how the Affordable Care Act has made an impact at my birth center in a way that is very discouraging as a business owner. We've heard from the women, and you know what women receive from birth centers. Satisfaction usually is very, very high. I'm going to talk a little bit about people who are employed at birth centers. At our birth center, we attend about 150 birth center births a year, and my payroll expenses for 2014 were $941,990. And that meant that I paid $23,000 in state taxes. So that's significant income for people and some revenue for the state. And I bring that up because last June I had to let four employees go. And it was really devastating. They were really wonderful midwives. And one of them was a woman who worked in our billing who is a single mom. And those people are collecting unemployment because we cannot make ends meet. More and more women are on, registered into CCOs and calling us every single day. We get tears on the phone from women who really want to hire us, and they can't because, again, we can only take three women per month at our birth center. So if you're the fourth person that calls and you really want this kind of care, you can't receive this kind of care, and midwives who want to continue to give this wonderful care are unable to be employed at the rate that I would like to employ people. So I'm saying if this passes, we will be able to employ more people. And it's really win-win both for me as an employer, employees, and for women who want to birth outside the hospital in freestanding birth centers. And House Bill 3456, our care, I won't go into all the details, but as you've heard again and again,
please?
Yes, we give awesome care. We give care that is, each woman receives more care. Because we see them for a longer period of time for each prenatal visit, usually 45 minutes. For each postpartum visit, could be up to 2 hours. So we want to be reimbursed in an equal amount as physicians and certified nurse midwives and other people that provide the same kind of care. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to give a letter, and also I printed out the statistics for the midwives in my practice today. So you can see it. And it's the nurse midwives and licensed midwives.
President Buehler?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Greenlick. Quick question. You can sit if you'd like. I'm very much in support of birthing centers and nurse midwives, but how is your situation any different than any other health care facility that doesn't get reimbursed for their cost-serving Oregon Health Plan Medicaid patients?
I am not aware of the costs that other facilities have reimbursed them. I do know that the quantity of people they take care of will probably absorb those costs more easily. I also know that we were able to do it until things started changing with the Affordable Care Act and fewer people on private insurance came, because it used to be that it didn't matter to us what came in for which client. It was how the cookies crumbled, you know, but that we could afford to be in business.
Yeah, I don't think this is a unique problem just to birthing centers. I think it's to any facility that services Oregon Medicaid patients. So.
Potentially it's birthing centers right now, though, that with the model that are on the brink of...
I own some of these facilities, and I know what the structure is. We get paid about 22% of the dollar of care. So it's not a unique problem.
We're going to alternate panels now between the home care bill and the...
Well, facilities aren't as bad.
The midwife bill.
Certainly, we only have three people on the midwife. Physician services.
Three left on both bills?
Yes, three. One...
Oh, that's great. All right, call those three.
Okay, for 3451, there's Augustine Colebrock. 3456, Augustine also, Elizabeth Remley, and Christine Anderson.
Those are all the people on 3451 and 3456?
Correct, Mr. Chair.
Oh, great. All right. You don't have to keep 2 minutes. You can talk more. Still be as brief as you can. Let's go ahead.
Hello, Representatives. Chair Greenlake, thank you so much. My name is Augustine Colebrook. I am a midwife. I am an Oregon resident. I'm a small business owner. And today I'm speaking to you as the president of the Oregon Association of Birth Centers. Oregon Association, OABC as we call it, was formed in late 2013. It's a nonprofit organization. OABC's mission is to promote the art and science of professional midwifery for the betterment of public health, to create and enforce standards of care for member centers, to lobby for legislation favorable to birth center midwives and their patients, and to provide exceptional midwifery educational opportunities. There are 17 birth centers in Oregon and more opening every year. OABC's family member services collectively serve thousands of Oregon families annually. So I feel like you all understand the definition of a freestanding birthing center, and you understand the reasons why. I want to talk to you a little bit about numbers. A Department of Health, Washington State Department of Health study released in January 2008, licensed midwifery care resulted in a cost savings to Medicaid of nearly $500,000 during that time frame between women and babies receiving lower rates of costly medical interventions, less fetal electronic monitoring, less episiotomies, lower rates of vacuum extraction and C-sections.
You're being upstaged by a baby, I have to tell you. Nobody's listening to you, I think. Keep trying.
There's only one testimony that matters, and you just have to say she really wants it.
Go ahead. So, House Bill 3451 provides for the appropriate reimbursement of patient care to birth centers for the duration of the stay at the facility by the Oregon Health Plan. Historically, this Medicaid reimbursement code 59409 has reimbursed $600 per mother-baby pair for the entire duration of their care. Obviously, we need to extend that to the actual costs. As a birth center owner myself, I own two birth centers in Southern Oregon. I can tell you that the facility code, the facility fee of $600, is about $2,000 to $3,000 less than it costs me to take care of the patient. So historically, my OHP clientele base represented about 17 to 20% of my clientele. It was about 40% was cash pay, and the rest was private insurance. So prior to the Affordable Care Act being administered in Oregon, I could offset the cost of my OHP losses by my cash and private insurance payments. With the Affordable Care Act passing and Cover Oregon coming into function here in the Oregon, all of those cash pay clients had to have insurance. And because I practice in Jackson and Josephine County, one of the lowest income counties in the state, all of those clients became OHP clients. Okay. So now I'm faced with a payer base of 60% that are OHP and the rest private insurance, many of them who then also qualify for OHP secondary. And when you have OHP secondary, you can bill the primary insurance, but you can only collect the OHP amount. So I'm looking at about 80% of my clientele base being OHP and it covering a fraction of the costs. I have also laid off many employees in the last 18 months. I'm functioning at such a bare bones staff. I'm concerned about safety now because I can't pay my expenses. So this bill, 3451, would bring us up to the actual cost of administering care. And I know that you can understand that $600 doesn't even pay staff, let alone the facilities. So as the Oregon Association of Birth Centers president, I can tell you that we are in a position now to follow this bill's recommendations and report on the median statewide cost of administering in a birth center. This year, we can provide those numbers for you. Let's make this patient-centered, cost-effective model sustainable so that birth centers can thrive in Oregon. Let's make sure we don't inadvertently discriminate against and restrict patient choice in Oregon by disincentivizing licensed birth centers from taking care of low-risk women. In other words, let's be the state that reduces the inequity gap in healthcare and make safe, affordable midwifery care available to all low-risk women. I'd also like a moment to speak about 3456.
Brief moment, please.
Yes, sir. So that same study in Washington State for the Department of Health in January 2008 that showed a reduction of cost to the state by about $500,000 biannually, when it gets applied to private insurance companies in that analysis, the savings to the healthcare system in Washington becomes $2.7 million. I want to urge you to please support and move into work session House Bill 3456, which would add licensed midwives to the list of women's health care providers in Oregon. I want to repeat, we only do women's health care. That is our only specialty. The fact that we're not included in Oregon's list of providers is an oversight and needs to be corrected. It would allow us to become on board with the Affordable Care Act, and it would allow providers to continue to provide cost-effective care to low-risk women.
Representative Hayden.
Chair Greenlee. So in essence, on 3451, are you asking that you have equal parity with the rural A, B, and C hospitals that do receive full cost reimbursement?
I don't think that we're asking for the same amount as the hospitals. We're just asking for the same treatment, that it cover our costs as well.
Not asking about amount. I'm asking about the cost basis. Mm-hmm. If your cost is $2,600, as you're saying, are you in effect asking for that cost basis to be met, which is met at the A, B, and C rural hospital?
We are indeed.
Different fee, but
yes,
on basis.
We are indeed.
Thank you.
Okay, please.
Chair Greenlee and members of the committee, Elizabeth Firmly here on behalf of Cambia, which has Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield. I have to run to a meeting, so I'm going to be very brief, and then I'm going to excuse myself. We've heard a lot today about the Oregon Health Plan. I'm here to testify in opposition to House Bill 3456, which is about private insurance. Cambia does reimburse midwife services, and I think we have concerns with just the way the bill is written. We believe that it sets up an any willing provider situation, which we would be opposed to. And it also allows, we think, a trade association to set rates rather than having a normal negotiation that most folks do when they get reimbursed with a health insurance plan. Cambia looked into some past records, and we can't find a situation where one of these birthing centers is actually asked for a contract with us to be reimbursed. This is a similar situation to a bill we had earlier this session around child abuse prevention centers. And so this would be a situation where we could probably solve this in a contracting situation rather than in a bill.
You have birth centers in your networks?
I don't know the answer to that. I can get back to you.
Well, you said nobody's asked you. Does that mean you don't have any?
I don't know the answer to that, and I will get back to you. Chair Greenlee.
So. All right, but you do know nobody's asked you, is that right?
Yes. Yeah, so in whatever time period we looked back in, we haven't had any requests.
Good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, committee members. My name is Christine Anderson. I apologize for having to bring my baby with me.
No, it's great.
That's
wonderful.
I am here to testify on behalf of both of the midwifery bills, and I just wanted to bring the viewpoint of the public. I have three children that have been born under a direct entry midwife at a birth center and under the care of those. And we've had situations where, because of insurance, we've had to pay for our births out of pocket. And we have had the opportunity to do that because we are not on the Oregon Health Plan, and we've been able to make that work financially. But I ask you to allow for that opportunity to be provided to those women who are on the Oregon Health Plan who are seeking this level of service that the midwives are providing. And I think it's fair that all Oregon birthing women have the opportunity to have the same level of care if that's what they seek. And I think it's fair to make it financially workable for these organizations that are here for our mothers. And I just wanted to support this bill, and I applaud you for looking at it.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Just real quick, we had, thank you, Chair Greenlee, we had testimony that there was a limitation of three clients per month. Is that an individual decision, or is that an Affordable Care Act?
That is not an Affordable Care Act decision. That is an individual birth center decision. They decide that based on their own set of income and expenses. I have not made that decision where I am in Southern Oregon because there's a 50% OHP insured base there, and that would reduce. I'm morally opposed to limiting care for low-risk women, and I also am. It would reduce my clientele base by half. So that's individual.
Are you paid by CCOs?
We are not. We have tried every year since it has happened to become in-network with CCOs. One of them says they don't pay for out-of-hospital birth. The other one in our area says they don't pay midwives. We've had all kinds of rallies. I've asked for meetings with the directors of those CCOs. They are essentially not willing to negotiate any contract with us. So the bills that went through the session that passed January 2015, went into effect January 2015, that would make OHP reimburse out-of-hospital providers for women that are low risk, it moves a woman to an open card. It does not happen through a CCO.
And that's the next step in legislation we need to. This is why these bills are so important.
They are being paid now through Open Card.
That's the theory, but each case is being case managed by a nurse in Salem. And so we have 8 women who've birthed in the last 2 months who have not been approved yet. So now I'm at a place where I have no cash flow. These bills are vitally important. These small businesses will close without the passage of these bills.
Okay. Representative Kenny Geyer.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity, Mr. Chair, for both a comment and a question. I'm quite sure I'm the only person on this dais who has had any babies in a birth center or at home, which I've done both.
I don't remember where I had my
It's baby. Not that I haven't been willing, Representative Geyer.
The only one capable, willing, and had a great experience, both in a birthplace and at home
the
with my 3 children.
Over there.
So a couple things. One is that thank you for Silka for the earlier testimony. We worked a lot with the licensed direct entry midwives to and the certified nurse midwives and a whole group of people a couple years ago to put forth mandatory licensing of direct entry midwives into our statute. That was a hard road, as I'm sure you can imagine. But I am very committed to trying to help anything we can to really support the option that people have to use licensed direct entry midwives in a safe setting. So I had heard, so this is the comment part, and then I'll get to the question. I had heard that there's concerns because there's been a lot of work to look at what are low risk versus high risk. And I know the board of direct entry midwives have taken on that really hard task. And so there's been some parameters set, and yet there is somebody, you described as a nurse in Salem, I'm not sure who it is, but somebody through OHA who is making her own determination about how who is at risk and not necessarily following this guideline. So I'm concerned about that and want to put that on the record. I know that that is only one of many barriers that you have. But the second question comes to just, you talked a lot about Washington. Okay. The first question is how is certification of birthplaces in Oregon different, if it is, from Washington? What is your, is there a certification process?
For the midwives or the birth centers?
For the birth center itself.
It's a very similar process. Both states have a licensure process.
Uh-huh.
Both states have a set of appropriate care options, standards of practice, policies. Oregon's licensing process is administered through the Oregon Health Authority, and they have regular inspections and regular interviews, very similar. We have to go through the Facilities Planning and Safety Committee first to even be apply to the birth center licensing code, and I think it's very thorough and very similar to Oregon, to
thank,
Washington.
Thank you. Follow up one question. Now my really second question. Is part of that certification any kind of requirement that there be a backup MOU with a hospital?
There is not in either state.
Okay.
Both, especially in Oregon, the birth centers that function in the communities where they exist have developed really wonderful collegial relationships with physicians and hospitals in their areas. That's a matter of necessity because we all have patient safety as our number one goal. And occasionally, women who start out low risk become higher risk and need to birth in a higher technological environment. So I don't know if that answers your question. Unfortunately, I would love to develop a direct backup relationship with my local hospital, but it is currently not possible because they are seemingly very afraid of litigation and so do not enter into direct relationships with us mm-hmm. because of their own fear of malpractice. Also, there's a very hostile environment between OBs and midwives in this state and in this country. I'm sure mm-hmm. you're aware of it in some fringe way if you aren't specifically. To give you a very specific example, in the last 4.5 years since I've owned a birth center in Southern Oregon, there have been 22 investigations on my license, and every single one of those patients came through my local hospital at one point or other during their pregnancy, mm-hmm. and I'm in contact with all of them. In other words, the complaints are being originated by our transferring facility.
Mm-hmm.
All of them have been thrown out, by the way.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3451 and House Bill 3456. And would you call the next panel on House Bill 3145, please?
Phil Bentley and Joe Greenman. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Greenleck, members of the committee. My name is Phil Bentley with the Oregon Healthcare Association, and with me is Joe Greenman, who is our general counsel. OHCA represents more than 700 skilled nursing, independent living, licensed residential and assisted living communities, as well as licensed in-home care agencies throughout Oregon. And a number of our licensed in-home care agencies are here to testify today in support of 3145. And I would just like to thank Representative McClain and Representative Bueller for bringing this bill into the session, and to thank the committee for hearing it today. In its simplest forms, I believe House Bill 3145 seeks to ensure that consumers receive high-quality care, whether it's provided through one of our in-home care agencies or from a provider on the Home Care Commission registry. And I'd like to turn it over now to Mr. Greenman to discuss the bill in a little more detail.
Thank you. Chair Greenlake, members of the committee, I'm Joe Greenman, general counsel with the Oregon Healthcare Association. And just for a brief moment of background, I'll just have you recall that in February of 2014, the legislature adopted Senate Bill 1542, sponsored by Senator Rosenbaum, which opened the Home Care Commission and mandated that the Home Care Commission and the Department of Human Services develop a program that would allow private pay consumers to purchase home care worker services off the registry for the first time ever, because the registry previously had been limited only to Medicaid eligible Oregonians to receive those services as an employer based client. And so they mandated that DHS create this program. We worked in that session to build some safeguards onto that program. And House Bill 3145, which we support and thank you for hearing today, really does two very straightforward and simple things. The first thing that it does is it clarifies that standards of services offered through the Home Care Choice Program, and that's the name of the initiative that DHS has chosen. It's called the Home Care Choice Program, must include at a minimum the standards adopted by the Oregon Health Authority for in-home care services. These standards have been created and updated by the Oregon Health Authority's Health Care Regulation and Quality Improvement Program for over a decade in collaborations with private licensed in-home care agencies for the purposes of creating transparent standards of home care services intended to benefit the consumers of these services. The other thing that the bill does is requires DHS to conduct periodic evaluations of private pay home care workers to determine that they are continuing to meet provider enrollment requirements. And those requirements pertain specifically to them maintaining their training and continuing education requirements to make sure that their ability to provide the services that they claim that they're providing off the registry are up to date and current. The reason that the equivalency between the services off this registry and the licensed in-home care agencies are so important is one of the elements that we added to Senate Bill 1542 via amendment was that for private pay individuals buying services off the registry, the initial point on that process would be that they would have to fill out a standard assessment, and that standard assessment tool would be developed by the Home Care Commission, that the client would be required to fill out that standard assessment tool, and that standard assessment tool would be the service plan for that person and essentially the agreement of what kinds of services that client would get from the worker during the period of time that they're receiving the services. The only problem with that is that would be a one-time only assessment process. And we know that these services can go on for months and in many cases years, and that the condition of the person receiving services can change. And because we're essentially talking about a frail elderly population, the condition usually changes for the worse. Additional services are needed.
And so additional follow-up assessments and evaluations might be necessary. And Senate Bill 1542 really didn't provide for that. By adopting this and having equivalent standards with licensed in-home care agencies, you would have additional follow-up assessments of the clients so that you would have some sort of maintenance of understanding of what their conditions are and whether the home care worker can continue to meet them or whether a reevaluation of the worker, the type of worker, and what additional services might be needed off that private pay portion of the home care registry. And so with that, I'll stop and see if any of the members of the committee have questions.
Representative Bueller.
Thanks, Chair Greenlick. Why would we want DHS to compete against private businesses with regards to these home care services?
Well, since I wasn't involved in the development of this I'm sorry, Chair Greenlick, Representative Bueller, I wasn't involved in the development.
Would you repeat your question? I didn't hear.
Why would we want DHS to compete against private businesses providing in-home care?
Yeah, and Chair Greenlick, Representative Bueller, we weren't involved in the development of the legislation, and so for that reason, it's not really something that I was particularly interested or wanting to see happen, and frankly, it's a concern that we had, but in the context of the way the legislation was built, brought forward, we worked collaboratively with the sponsors of the legislation to, at a minimum, make sure that there were safeguards and standards in place that would make sure that that private pay registry had to fully account for the cost of services for the clients that it was providing, so it wouldn't be at a cost to the state government, and that the consumers could have some sort of transparent process by which they understand what kinds of services they're buying and at what cost, and that there would be some protections for them as well.
Would there be competition between the home and, I mean, between the state and the private?
I think that's what we have right now, right? There's competition between private and state-provided services.
Well, Chair Greenlick, Representative Bueller, there will be competition. So Senate Bill 1542 hasn't actually been fully implemented. Okay. We're in the process of rulemaking with the Home Care Commission, and the anticipated start date would be January 1st, 2016. And at that point, there will be competition between the Home Care Commission and its registry and these privately licensed in-home care agencies that have been in our market and licensed under state law and state administrative rules back since the early 2000s, almost 15 years now.
I guess if there is going to be competition, which it sounds like if there's not, there will be, everyone should be under the same standards or same operation.
Chair Greenlick, Representative Bueller, I agree with that statement.
I think is that what you're, that's what this bill proposes?
Yes.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can you call the next panel, please?
Melinda Reed and Jill Rosen. Is it Rosenberg? Mm-hmm. Rosenberg, thank you.
Chair Greenlick and members of the committee, I'm very happy to be here. My name is Melinda Reed. I'm a registered nurse, and over 18 years ago, I started No Worries In-Home Care. It's a comprehensive in-home care agency. I served as an original member of the Rules Committee that implemented the legislature's passage of a bill for in-home care licensure. I served on that committee for 3 years because the bill required all three divisions of DHS to agree, which was a stretch, as you can imagine, and also that private industry be involved, and also the community. And so it took us 3 years, with the final rules being submitted in December of 2002. 3 years, with multiple public hearings and a lot of input. It ended up with a great set of rules, but it did take us a long time and was not without a lot of effort. You may wonder why, besides having so many people agree on something, that it took so long. And the reason is the demographic of the clients that we serve. Over 50% of all people over the age of 85 have some form of dementia. There is also a trend for people to be leaving facility-based care and having care provided in their home. And so with that transition to in-home, we find that we're providing a lot of complex care. We provide a lot of care, starting out with homemaking companionship, all the way to complex care companies like my own that provides care for people that need tube feedings, insulin administration, tracheostomy care, colostomy care. Some companies even provide ventilator care.
You're talking about the full range now, from
the
skilled
full range.
Care to
yes.
The less than skilled care. I'm forgetting what the other end is.
That's correct. It's amazing what we have been able to do safely, and these rules have provided for safety. Over the years, refinements to the rules have been made. Recently, the Oregon Health Authority made a refinement because consumers were confused. We had agencies that were companionship homemaking only and agencies that could run the full gamut. But what happened, as an example, is I got called on Christmas Eve one year from a family whose loved one had just gotten to the point in their needing care where they needed to have as-needed liquid morphine provided, which the agency they had could not provide. And so they were calling around because they couldn't, the family couldn't do it, and what do you do? And so it was wonderful that the Oregon Health Authority came up with a classification system so consumers could choose. If they had a loved one on hospice, they know they need an agency that's going to be able to provide that kind of medication administration. And it was wonderful clarity for consumers. They also made some recent changes to medication administration rules, which was a further refinement. So for 13 years, we've had these rules in place and have refined them and had public hearings and rules committee hearings, and they have provided great standardization and oversight of services provided to seniors, people with disabilities, and also those needing personal care. I'm here today to support House Bill 3145, which would require the Home Care Choice Program to comply with the Division 536 rules for the following three reasons. First, consumers have a right to have the same standard from all those who provide in-home care. The standards adopted by the Oregon Health Authority for in-home care agencies were created and have been updated for the purpose of creating transparent standards of home care services for the benefit of consumers of these services. Second, the Home Care Commission was formed to ensure quality care to seniors and those with disabilities. House Bill 3145 would support the Home Care Commission's mission by requiring the Home Care Choice Program to follow the same standards, Division 536, that private industry in-home care agencies have been required to follow. That's a huge point, that the Home Care Commission was based to provide safe care, and the state has this wonderful avenue to do it with Division 536 Oregon Administrative Rules. My last reason why this bill is so wonderful is that it provides a solution for oversight of home care providers. I would like to give an example. I don't want to be inflammatory. It's just a very good example. We need to look to Ohio. In Ohio, Governor Kasich has proposed a two-year budget that will essentially phase out independent home care workers and direct patients to receive care through agencies. Why? According to Governor Kasich's representatives, the goal is to help curtail fraud that costs Ohio taxpayers millions of dollars every year. Without any formal regulatory agency or oversight, it is difficult to accurately determine whether elderly and disabled individuals are receiving the proper level of care they need, or that the independent in-home care providers are working for the hours submitted to the state for reimbursement. A significant reason, according to some within Governor Kasich's administration, has to do with oversight. It is easier to regulate agencies and determine whether services are actually being provided to clients through them than through independent caregivers, many of whom may be family members. House Bill 3145 would provide the oversight needed through the Oregon Health Authority. In Oregon, we have the solution to determine if services are actually being provided to clients at the level of care they need. In conclusion, I ask the House Committee on Healthcare to support adoption of House Bill 3145, which provides consumer protection through standardization and oversight. And I thank you all for your time and the opportunity to testify.
I want to ask you a question.
Sure.
Maybe Representative Bueller is.
I'm very hard of hearing, so.
Okay, I'll speak up. There are kind of two ways, there are two sets of home care workers, is that right? There's one set that's a part of the state registry, and that group of home care workers only work for Medicaid patients?
Currently, until the Home Care Choice Program is implemented January 1st of 2016.
And that will have independent home care workers on that registry, not as a part of an agency?
The Senate bill that was passed last year provided that the Home Care Commission could start a competing in-home care agency with private industry. So they will have their own in-home care agency starting January of 2016 that will compete with private industry.
Thank you. Yes, please.
My name is Jill Rosenberg. I've been in the home care industry for over 35 years. I'm the administrator and owner of Always at Home Care. We are a comprehensive agency in King City serving Greater Portland, Marion, and Yamhill counties. Being a comprehensive agency by definition means that we can provide medication and nursing services to our clients, all under the direction of a registered nurse. I am not a nurse myself, but I have nurses who work for me who provide this service. Most of my clients require medication services since they are unable to determine the correct medication, route, and frequency for their medications. Many of them couldn't even name their medications nor figure out how to order them as needed. We have a nurse on staff to provide medication training, supervision, and support to our caregivers on a regular basis. Each month, they provide what is called a medication administration record to each of our medication clients, which documents and serves as a formal record of their care. They routinely conduct interaction with their physician and family over their medication needs. This feature assures our clients receiving medications in the correct dose and frequency as ordered by their physician or practitioner. With that on our end, I believe our clients would be at risk and would not receive the care they so deserve. The caregivers also would not have the benefit of a resource of a nurse for information.
How does that tie to this bill?
Because this is what our agency does, and it assures.
But will it change anything? I mean, is this bill going to affect you in some way?
Absolutely, because it's going to be a competitor that doesn't have the same standards but provides comparable service. And to me, in my opinion, that
And
is
it
not,
will have different standards than your agency has?
It will have different standards and perhaps no standards than what I am required to do as a comprehensive provider or any provider. They will be allowed to provide services, but not have the same standards.
I thought this bill is about making sure they have
no,
the same standards.
No, they will, but I'm trying
under
to
under the
explain.
Bill. Okay.
Oh, absolutely.
All right.
I'm
so,
totally
so
in favor of the bill. But
you're
in
favor of the bill because it will.
Absolutely, but I'm trying to explain the importance of the standards and regulations that an agency. And many agencies are comprehensive that provide Melinda's, myself, many of the people who will be here. I'm totally in support of the bill. But I just want to mention to you the importance of the standards that a comprehensive agency must go through so that the caregivers will have resources, information, and be able to have a nurse to answer questions about the care and the medications that they administer to their clients. I cannot emphasize enough the benefit of having a nurse as part of an agency, and I feel it significantly helps my clients and certainly supports my caregivers. My understanding is that would not be a standard that this registry would have to maintain. And I see that as something that will be to the detriment of the clients and caregivers, which is why I'm supporting this bill.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you have a question? Will you call the next panel, please?
Next panel is Toby Forsberg, Lori Setzenbach, and then Melissa Unger. Okay.
Brought a prop. Greetings, Chair Greenlick and committee members. My name is Toby Forsberg. I'm with Helping Hands Home Care. And I'm here today to share some information that will hopefully lead you to support House Bill 3145. I brought this binder today that holds my policies and procedures. I'm not going to go through it.
No, you're not.
But essentially, over a year of reading, understanding, learning the Oregon administrative rules as they relate to in-home care, I attained my licensure. Before I became licensed, I had to develop policies and procedures and all the associated forms to ensure that my company and caregivers were well vetted and prepared to properly care for some of our state's most vulnerable population, seniors and people with disabilities. The Oregon Health Authority, as you've heard, created the Home Care Regulation, Healthcare Regulation and Quality Improvement Division to ensure that agencies follow these Oregon administrative rules. HB 3145, which I support, addresses just a small portion of these rules, these well-governed rules that were created to protect seniors. It simply establishes some of the mandates created to govern agencies by creating oversight and equivalency standards for the protection of our seniors from fraud, abuse, and substandard care. The rules that we are governed by that are also being addressed by 3145 include provisions for quarterly evaluations. I think you heard that earlier from Joe. These are called monitoring visits. And these are required every 90 days. Typically, agencies send a nurse, or they send a director or administrator, a healthcare professional, not a caregiver. And they're essential because, and required by the state, because a person's health is not static. It's ever-changing, and as their health needs change, the level of care required will change, and it's paramount that it is assessed at least quarterly to ensure the right caregiver with the right skills is caring for that individual. You also heard that we have classifications. There are four different classifications: limited, basic, intermediate, and comprehensive. The reason this is so important is because essential and high-level tasks and duties may be necessary. Things like medication administration and wound care, typically things reserved for delegated caregivers or nurses, can only be performed by comprehensive agencies who have copious policies and procedures. Without the adopted standards of House Bill 3145, the Home Care Choice Program would essentially have a one-size-fits-all approach and no follow-up or oversight. It's paramount that the same rules created to safeguard seniors from caregivers employed by in-home care agencies are adopted to safeguard those same seniors from caregivers under the Home Care Choice Program. It's not about creating an equal playing field. It's about the safety of some of the state's most vulnerable citizens. Without the oversight, the consequences could be disastrous and lead to poor health outcomes, more hospitalizations, abuse, and fraud. I urge you to support House Bill 3145. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Greenlick and members, thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony in support of House Bill 3145. My name is Lori Sensenbaugh. My husband Todd and I are the owners of an in-home care agency serving Crook, Deschutes, and Jefferson counties. We are licensed through the Oregon Health Authority and regulated by the OARs, commonly referred to here today as Division 536. Oversight for compliance exists for us through the Oregon Health Authority's Healthcare Regulation and Quality Improvement Office. Our caregivers provide services to over 100 seniors and disabled people in our counties in Central Oregon, and over 50% of those people have some form of dementia. One of the requirements of agencies is initial and ongoing evaluations of those people and our caregivers, and House Bill 3145 directly addresses this. The initial evaluation we do occurs between 7 and 30 days of beginning service, and then we do one every 90 days thereafter. My company also will go out to the home anytime that we get a call from either a client of ours, a caregiver, or a family member if there's any type of concern at all. So we go to the homes a lot and provide supervision quite a bit to our employees. So why am I so convicted that these supervisory visits are important? First of all, we serve a vulnerable population in our elderly and disabled people. An example of this is a gentleman we began serving who had previously been taken care of by an unlicensed person who unfortunately had taken his debit card to purchase groceries, and when she was doing that was additionally taking a little bit of cash. Over a year's time, she had depleted his checking account. Also, elderly and disabled people change very frequently, sometimes daily, and their mental, physical, and emotional state can change. As I mentioned, we serve many people diagnosed with dementia, and this disease is so unpredictable in the progression of symptoms. Someone oftentimes will progress very slowly and then almost overnight seem to change quite quickly. So how do the supervisory visits solve these issues? First of all, consistent visits to the home ensure that we are always observing what's going on.
I'm going to ask you the same question.
Sure.
How does this relate to the bill itself?
The bill supports these evaluations. The term the bill uses is evaluations. I'm calling them supervisory visits. So,
and it's in your requirements, and you want to make sure that the same kind of supervision is required of the new state program.
Exactly. Yes, okay. Sir. So we're observing and making sure that someone is not taking advantage of the elderly person. Also, these visits to the home ensure that caregivers have the opportunity to ask for help and additional training to build their confidence in the care that they're providing. And consistent visits to the home identify changes and address additional services that the elderly person may be in need of and training that the caregiver may also need. I believe in making a difference every day in the lives of those that we serve by providing the highest level of care possible in the home. And it's for the reasons that I've mentioned today that I support House Bill 3145 and believe that the requirements of the Home Care Choice Program to administer similarly consistent evaluations in order to ensure the quality to the consumers of their program. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Dunger?
Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Melissa Unger, and I'm the political director for SEIU Local 503, and I'm here to talk about House Bill 3145. And while I'm talking, I'm passing out two different pieces of information that I thought would be helpful background information for today. One was the fact sheet that was created last year when Senate Bill 1542 passed with bipartisan support, and then also the worker class, the subcommittees that have been created as the Oregon Home Care Program have tried to set up the Oregon Home Care Choice Program since the passage of Senate Bill 1542. SEIU Local 503 represents over 20,000 home care workers in the state of Oregon, including that work for through the Oregon Home Care Commission. We also represent private pay home care worker and agency, Addis Home Care Agency workers as well, and we represent workers across the long-term care spectrum. Currently in Oregon, we actually have one of the strongest home care programs across the country, especially for Medicaid consumers, and the Medicaid consumers can access workers through a registry. They can find out what kind of skills they have. They can find out what kind of trainings they have. They can find out what kind of languages they speak. And they can choose a home care provider based on what fits their needs and who works with them best. And even right now, we don't have enough home care workers to provide for the needs of both the people with seniors, people with disabilities, and people with developmental disabilities. Just to be clear, the Oregon Home Care Commission serves all three sets of those populations and not just seniors and people with disabilities, but also people with developmental disabilities. We actually want to talk more about how do we do the right set of training and mix of certification and workforce across all of this, because we agree that home care workers, whether you work for an agency or whether you work for the state, should probably have similar training and background, and we're interested in that conversation. There's actually a bill in the Senate tomorrow about what is the right mix of certification, but it and training, but it is very different for the way that Medicaid consumers work and the way that Home Care Choice was set up to work. One, you know, Medicaid consumers may be working with somebody they know and have known for a long time. It could even be a daughter or a son. And so what is the right mix of training or certification in that situation? So there's just lots of different scenarios that need to be discussed. Also, how do we make sure we don't create a barrier of entry? Right now, we already have a huge workforce problem. So how do we make sure that we don't stop people from becoming home care workers because we make a barrier of entry so high? So that's kind of overall. We're really interested in this conversation and interested in the conversation for all different workers. Last session, we did work to pass this program called Home Care Choice, and the Home Care Commission for the past year has been working to set up the program. And so the goal of the program was, one, to make sure that consumers had autonomy. Since a relationship with a home care worker is very personal, this policy enables someone to choose their home care worker. It's very different than the way that an agency works, and it was never set up to compete with an agency. Right now, as I think you heard, a home care agency will go and do an assessment. And this program, really, we're offering someone who wants to purchase a home care service to choose who they want to work for. Right now, this often happens by paying someone who lives down the street or by going to Craigslist. And the goal of this bill was to actually set up a system where someone didn't have to go to Craigslist or something like that to find someone to come help with some basic home care responsibilities, but instead to actually have a system where someone would take care of the payroll, someone would take care of the standards, someone would make sure they were background checked. All of those things happen through the commission. So it is a slightly different. The goal of the program was actually different than a home care agency. We once again, it was a lot about peace of mind. How do we make sure some of the things they talked about? We want to make sure the workers are background checked. We want to make sure that they're safe and that they have an administrative side of the employment relationship is taken care of. We wanted to make sure that it was affordable for folks. That was one of the goals. And that also it was has access issues. Right now there's rules about how far, there's certain areas, rural areas that go, you can't find a home care agency that serves your needs. So the goal of this was to make sure that it had, we have thousands of workers on the registry. We need more workers on the registry, but we actually have home care workers who provide for Medicaid clients in every single county in the state. So that is a part of this. So since there's been this bill has passed 2 years ago, there's been three implementation committees, and that was, I passed that out. It said on the piece that says the Oregon Home Care Commission. And they've been working to write the rules and figure out how to implement the program in a way that serves the consumers and makes sense for the commission. The committees have been very inclusive. It's included in-home care agencies, members of the public, counties, and many different departments. They've had over 20 hours of meetings, and currently there's actually a survey in the field for in-home care agencies to talk about what they pay, what areas they cover, to try to learn more about how these things can work together. And many people are replying. And there's also been a lot of conversations about what are the different standards and trainings right now, and how do we make sure that we bridge that gap.
Ms. Unger, yep. I can ask you the same question. How does this testimony relate to this bill?
It relates to this bill because this bill fundamentally changes the Home Care Choice program.
Are you supporting it? Are you supporting the bill or opposed?
We do not support the bill.
You oppose the bill?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have concerns with the bill, and just to be the reason that it changes the home care program, as I was talking to the Home Care Commission yesterday, trying to understand the bill more, actually, is right now, the program that's set up through the Home Care Choice program, there's been an entire committee to look at self-assessment. The goal here hasn't been to replace what home care agencies do, but instead the in-home care agencies do, but instead to provide somebody whose family may say, we need somebody a couple hours a week, and this is what we need, and they can do a self-assessment, and they can go to a registry and choose someone who's been background checked and can say, this is the training I have, and they can choose someone who fits their needs. That currently doesn't exist in the market. And so that, but right now, if this bill was to pass as written, it would force the Home Care Commission to become a home care agency, which is never meant to be. There, it was never meant to go do assessments of people in the field. This was really meant to be something for people who want to buy, want to hire a home care worker, but want to choose who it is, and don't want to necessarily just kind of pay them for the time they come, or deal with the IRS, or deal with all those pieces. So those are two very different programs. That was, so the bill does fundamentally change the original intent of the home care choice program that was passed last biennium or last session, and I think that so that's why we have concerns with it, and that's why we think it has to do with the bill. What I was saying, you're no problem. So just to kind of put this, is the Home Care Choice Program committees have been meeting for the last 3-4 months. There's a survey in the field. As I said, the participation in the committees have been diverse and included counties. It's included it's included in-home care agencies. And I think the other thing is that the goal of the Home Care Choice Program is actually to serve all disabilities and all different seniors. And so that is different than also what is currently out there in the market. We don't really believe this is meant to be competition. We really did want to set up a program for a different kind, somebody who's looking for a home care agency through a different, and home care person through different sources, kind of the gray market, as it's called, going on Craigslist, hiring your neighbor, whatever it is. And how can we set them up with a home care worker who's already background checked and trained. That's what I have for you today, and I can answer any questions.
Representative Liven and Representative Bueller.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. So this home care choice sheet you handed out.
This was
on the back of it. It says current steps to hire an in-home caregiver. So I'm confused when I look at those steps, which are pretty substantial. So is that the result of the home care choice? I mean, that is the process they would go through or not?
Representative Greenlick and Representative Lively. No, so this was kind of when we were passing the bill last time. This was kind of saying, like, if you wanted to hire someone on your own and just go find someone in the kind of supposedly gray market, that would have been the steps. And so that was kind of the problem the bill was trying to solve, was if you wanted to find somebody and have someone come to your home.
Yeah,
you did. Yeah, that's what you were trying to solve.
Thank you.
No problem.
President Bueller?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. So this is a complex issue, as we've talked about earlier today. So why would someone want to, why wouldn't they just go to a typical home care agency and hire someone? Why would they go through all these steps?
Yeah. Chair Green, like Representative Bueller, I think there's a variety of different reasons. I think lots of people do go to home care agencies, and that's great. I think that the difference is you don't get to choose your provider necessarily, right? They come and do an assessment, and they take somebody who works for them and says, oh, this person will likely meet your needs the best. So what if you want to, what if knowing somebody is your number one priority, and you're really just looking for somebody to be, you know, a housekeeper and do your shopping? Those are some of the things that home care workers do, right? And so maybe you want to know them, but maybe you don't want to deal with the hassle of all of these other pieces, because with an agency, that's not that they have workers and they go and provide the services that the consumer needs. Mm-hmm. But so it could just be what you want to out of your home care worker or what you need out of your home care worker.
Just a couple follow-ups. I'm just trying to define this a little bit. So using the commission, using DHS, they can do that?
Yeah, they can. Chair Greenlake, Representative Bueller, yeah, they can choose their home care worker off our agency. They could interview multiple people.
But they'd have to be registered already on the registry. Couldn't they just their friend that...
Yeah, I guess they could probably say, hey, go sign up for this program, right? They could go get background checked and do this program, but they would have to do that. They could also just hire their friend if they wanted to, right, and pay them $50 a day or whatever they do. But they could say, hey, friend, go register, get background checked, do these orientations and go through this program, and then I can hire you and not have to deal with all of this paperwork. They could do that if they wanted to through this program, theoretically.
What's the advantage of hiring? They don't have to do paperwork. They pay the commission.
Chair Greenlick, that is correct.
They pay the commission.
There's like in the bill, I was not the key point person on this bill, but in the bill there's a cover of administrative costs so that they pay the commission for the entire cost of that worker, including the overhead that it would cost a commission to oversee this program.
And the commission pays the worker.
Yeah, and the commission pays the worker. So they don't have to do any of the kind of payroll stuff, and they don't have to deal with the worker piece of that.
I'm sorry, Representative.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Thank you. And you know, I'm all for yardstick competition, meaning government competing with business if there's real market failures we're fixing, or if it's hard to understand the cost structure, you know, and the government's financing it. But it sounds like to me there's a pretty robust private providers out there in most areas. So what market failure, other than wanting to hire someone you know, that you're solving with the government providing this service?
Chair Greenlick, Representative Bueller, I mean, like I said, I wasn't a part of the debate last session, but my real understanding is that there is actually a lot of people who continue to go out and just kind of purchase home care services on the market, right? Like, just kind of want to, they hire their neighbor to come do this small thing and a couple hours, and that develops. And this really was meant to fill that need. And also, we also have a broad network of people who currently provide these Medicaid services. So I don't think, I mean, through the Home Care Choice Program, there won't be nursing services. That's not something someone would get through this.
Yeah.
And so it's really meant to fill that. That's the I think a piece that they're solving. And I do actually think Home Care with Choice, as we have continued to talk with consumers through the Medicaid process, is lots of people do care about who is their caregiver, right? Who's with them on an ongoing basis, and who is it? And the idea that you get to choose them, and you get to choose who you have working for you like you do through the Medicaid program, is actually very appealing to people. And I think that's a piece of it, too, is that home care with choice is a growing kind of need. And there's some agencies and other states who have set up home care with choice.
And one more follow-up. I think that's, you know, that's a good argument. But if that's the case, why should these people not be held to the same standards as the people they're competing against?
Chair Greenlake and Representative Bueller, I think that there's two different conversations. This bill actually makes the Oregon Home Care Commission like a home care agency, so it would make them do the assessments and all that kind of stuff. The question about what training is actually necessary for the home care workers, mm-hmm. we would be happy to engage in that conversation. And I think we have through these work groups, but if it needs to be a more formal conversation, we actually, like I said, tomorrow are talking about a bill where we want to set up a task force, like, should home care workers be certified? Should they not be certified? What are the right trainings and mm-hmm. skills that you need? And so I think that those two different conversations are slightly different for us, is should the Home Care Commission be exactly like an agency, which we're trying to say it's not. That's really not the mm-hmm. that's not the need we're trying to fill here. But if the question's about what kind of home care worker training we have and what kind of different pieces to make sure that home care workers are actually have the right skill sets to meet the needs of the consumers, like, that's a conversation we're actually hoping to have in another bill.
Yeah, I guess training is one thing, but actually happen to do the same level of service and follow the same regulations is another issue.
Chair Greenlick and Representative Bueller, I think the question is that what the intent of the bill was meant to be? And I think that the intent of the bill was really not to be a home care agency. It was really to be a way for people who wanted to purchase home care services for themselves and their family were directing the care in lots of different ways that you see that.
I'm talking about this bill, though.
No. This bill is trying to make the Home Care Commission into a home care agency.
We're about out of time. You have one very brief thing, Representative Wyden?
I can wait.
Okay. We got to get out of here. I'm going to close the work session on the public hearing on House Bill 3145. And we are adjourned. We are adjourned.